sometimes you're just people that are curious. And so I just don't want to be stymied by the fact that this one person, this one time asked this one question that threw me off. You've got to stop living by the exception, live by the rule. The rule is most people just want to know what time it is. The exception would be, hey, how did you build that watch? And a lot of salespeople are stymied to sell because of that one question, that one time that happened.
Welcome to the News Nirvana Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana Podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Blocks Digital. Blocks Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blocks Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive, and you can connect with them at blocksdigital.com. Hello, and welcome back to the News Nirvana Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. With me today, Ryan Dorn. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Always happy to chat about media and sales and love and life, you name it. So take the conversation any direction you want to go. Just be careful. You never know what the end result's going to be.
I am both excited and a little nervous.
Okay.
I'm excited because I think talking about sales in the media industry is important. And I think now is even a more important time than any in my 20 to 30 year a career in and around the media industry. I think that it's a different conversation now, and it's important to have. I'm nervous and I'm scared because I'm not good at it.
There you go. There you
and
go.
When I have to go sell for my own organization, news organization, I get a lot of anxiety because I was never trained to do that part of the job. I came up editorial,
right?
So that was never in my thing. As a matter of fact, when I first got here, there was still the giant brick wall between editorial and advertising.
You got it.
And now we've realized that, especially when it comes to community journalism organizations,
you bet,
that line has to be, that wall has to be a lot thinner, a lot more transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. We have to all work together to be successful, and to be able to not only be a successful business, but to continue to do the good journalism that's needed
right around the
world, right? Yeah. So let's just start off a little bit with who are you, Ryan? I mean, I just got to know you last week a little bit.
Awesome.
But let's get a little bit of your background and what you do.
Yeah, so 33 years of nothing but sales and marketing, and started off in the radio business. So I was a radio DJ, so I've been in front of the microphone here for 30-some years. So I was really happy.
There's no better place to be, man. I love a microphone. And I didn't get to it till late.
Yeah. So I enjoy sitting in my studio and talking to people that a lot of times I can't hear any reaction, which is different. And so I did radio for a while, and then I realized I could make more money selling radio. So I did DJ and sales. Then I moved to the TV side of the business, found out the exact same thing. Had a nice career in radio and TV, and ended up in Chicago, where I went to college, as well as then worked at WLS in downtown Chicago. And then I realized that as the internet came into play in 96, 97, 98, there was a tremendous need for people in the media business to really get online. And so I just really started training and teaching around how to sell, launch digital products as it relates to media companies. And it really has kind of gone from there. So I've had the opportunity to be a magazine publisher, work in the newspaper business, magazine business, the digital side of the business. But I went to so much bad training that I realized, hey, my gift is it from on high, so to speak, is teaching people. And that's where I really love. So that's what I really love. So I spend half my time selling. So I'm responsible for a couple million dollars a year in sales. Spend half my time coaching and training people and doing things just like this and helping people like you realize the less you sell, the more you're going to sell. It's a beautiful time to be in sales, Nick. It really is, because people don't want to be sold. So if you're
one
of those,
I want to believe you.
The less you sell, the more conversations you just have with people, just genuine, authentic conversations, the more you're going to sell to them. Because SAP did a study. 89% of buyers a couple of years ago, 89% of buyers would rather go to the dentist than talk to a salesperson. So I was going to title my last book, The Less You Sell, The More You Sell, but I was afraid it wouldn't sell. So there's good news for people like you, because so many people are being told, hey, you've got to help us sell. I mean, you've got to help us sell this project. And it's actually not that hard. And there's some fundamentals that we can talk about on the show. And how to get over that hump and get out there and sell stuff and make some money.
Well, I love this. And like I said earlier when we were starting up, that I think the timing is great for this. You know, for the last 15, 20 years, we've moved to digital and the need for digital. But the biggest thing we've learned is selling digital product is a lot different than selling a print product or a broadcast ad. It's different. And it's not apples to apples comparison in pricing. It's not apples to apples in comparison to what it does and what the return is for your business partner. Right.
Right.
Agreed. So we've had to change what we're doing along with, oh, by the way, we realize that all departments have to work together to create and sell the product. So, you know, where do we start with that? I mean, how do you wrap your brain or help people wrap their brains around that change and what we're packaging and what we're trying to do to create partnerships?
Right. Well, the first thing is to recognize that most advertisers that are out there are clients you're going to sell, whether you're selling software, media, or whatever, that most of those folks really don't know anything about sales. And so all they've done is they've been called on by salespeople. So when you're genuine, when you're authentic, when you're relevant to people, instead of trying to sell them a product, when you're highly relevant to them, you'll always get further faster, no matter what it is that you're selling. So generic outreaches via email, via phone, being generic just doesn't work out. I mean, if you look at like a place like Cold Stone Creamery, for example, if they just sold vanilla ice cream, it'd be kind of like, okay. But they take you to the next level by adding the sprinkles and the chocolate and the candy and all that kind of things. And so you've got to recognize first that generic outreach without relevance just doesn't work out. Here's the beautiful thing though. LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, you name it. There's all this data that's there. So I can reach out and rather than saying, hey, Nick, you want to buy an ad? It's, hey, Nick, I saw on Facebook that you guys are doing this and I'd love to help you with that. And by the way, we've worked with Bob and Sally and Susie and they're loving what we're doing. Could I just get 5 minutes to chat? And that's really just the conversation to be had. So the first place, in my opinion, to start is to recognize that most people don't know how to sell. Most people don't know the good side of the sales business. But more than anything, stop being generic. Be extremely relevant to people. Not a know-it-all, but be extremely relevant using the data that's in front of us. And when you are, then people will give you the time of day because they want help. They just don't want to be sold.
I love that to talk about being relevant. And you also hinted at something that was brought up in a previous episode of this podcast when we had Rick Rogers on.
Sure.
And he talked about start with audience. That right. Really what we're doing is we're talking about building audience. We're talking about putting my audience to work for you and your audience. And we're putting those together. We're becoming partners with a bigger audience rather than focusing on the product. The product is important, but what's really important for us as we become business partners is that shared audience.
Correct. And most people, and Rick knows this as well, is that most people, when they're looking to tell time, they just want to know what time it is. They don't want to know how the watch is built.
Right.
And so a lot of times people like yourself and others that are a little bit newer to the sales game will think that they need to be able to teach someone how a watch is made when the business owner really just wants the end result of what time is it. So as you're selling digital products, it's important not to get into what's inside the hot dog. Just sell the hot dog. Just sell the watch, not the inner workings of the watch. We get so lost in the sales business in selling what makes it tick as opposed to what's the end result that you want. Most people out there, sales is actually moderately simple. Most people out there want to know three things. Number one, how much is it?
Right.
Number two, who else has used the product, service, or whatever? And then number three, how much is it again? That's really all that they want. And we don't have to say a lot more than that. Even if we're in a, like say you're the third radio station in a market or you're the number three website or whatever. Most people just want to know what time is it, not how to build the watch. So a lot of times people, even like yourself, are afraid to sell because it's like, oh, what questions am I going to get asked? You don't have to know every answer. It's okay.
I think you're right there. And I will speak just for myself, although I imagine that this is a shared anxiety.
Absolutely.
Coming up on the editorial side, I love process, right? Like writing about process is what we do. Explaining a complicated thing in a way that the masses can understand is what we are trained to do.
Right.
And then what you just said is forget that for a second.
Right.
You don't need to explain the process when you're pitching the business and the audience.
Yep. Yep.
You just need to tell them where you can get them.
And there's always somebody out there that's going to want to know, how is the souffle made? You know, give me details on that. There's always that advertiser or that business owner. And if you don't know how it's made, definitely don't try to make it up. Sometimes there's ways you can say things like this. Hey, what I can tell you is the end result is an amazing souffle, but I'm not a chef and I don't expect you to be a chef. Sometimes you're just people that are curious. And so I just don't want to be stymied by the fact that this one person, this one time asked this one question threw me off. You've got to stop living by the exception, live by the rule. The rule is most people just want to know what time it is. The exception would be, hey, how did you build that watch? And a lot of salespeople are stymied to sell because of that one question, that one time that happened. Or they change their entire life or their sales strategy based on this one time, this one thing happened. Instead, build your sales cases around the rule that typically happens, and that is that most people just want to enjoy the hot dog. But once you stop and figure out what's in it, you're like, oh, gross, I don't want to eat it now. Right. You know, and I think that's an important piece.
I like that you switched to hot dog there, because I don't care what's in the ice cream. I'll keep eating the ice cream.
Yeah, there you go. More food analogies, please. More food analogies.
Well, let's kind of change the comparison a little bit, because you said you started behind the microphone.
Yep.
So you started on a different side of the business. What was it that clicked, other than obviously you saw, hey, there's a chance to make more money.
Right.
You know, my career earnings can be better if I do this as well. But what was it that I guess that clicked for you as I can do this. I have a skill set here, or I understand how to build that skill set. Was there something there that you had to learn, or that you realized you kind of already knew? I'm trying to look to see what other people can see that as well.
Sure. I just realized that I was a conversationalist, and I realized that having a conversation with somebody was moderately easy for me. And so the reason that you will be successful in sales, Nick, is because you can have a conversation. It's a part of who you are. It's part of your DNA is having conversations. Even if you by nature are an introvert, if you know how to have a conversation with someone, which is important, we're trying to teach our children that, things like that, become a great conversationalist. People that can carry a conversation are people that can do well in sales. So the secret for me, besides the money piece that you mentioned, was that I realized I was having all these conversations with people about marketing solutions, yet I wasn't getting paid for the marketing solution. So I'd be at a radio remote, working like at WPXR, FM radio or whatever. And the customer is asking me about marketing solutions. And I realized, my gosh, I'm selling this right now, even as an on-air personality. And so I realized, well, why am I not getting paid for it? And that's kind of how I moved in the transition into it. But I still stayed behind the mic or behind the camera because I just enjoyed that part of it. And now I'm doing this, you know, from a teaching perspective as well.
I like that you just made that about conversation is important. And my personal kind of anecdote to that too is I have a friend that I work with, and he is a sales coach as well. And he has taken it upon himself to fix me. but what he said is, like, you do sales, you convince people to talk.
Correct.
Like, that's sales. He said, just stop worrying about asking for money, which is the thing for me that gives me the anxiety.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about it. Because the anxiety piece is, if you set yourself up for success on the sales call, you'll have no problem asking for money at the end of the sales call. So typically in any sales conversation, there's going to be two points that are awkward. Getting the conversation going, which is easy to fix, we'll talk about it. Ending the conversation where you're asking for money. That's easy if you set yourself up for success. The fastest way to sell is by sharing examples of other businesses you've been working with that have been successful. It doesn't matter whether you're selling toilet paper, you're selling encyclopedias, you're selling media. It doesn't matter. I think the success stories on toilet paper would be a little bit awkward to talk about. But no matter what it is you're selling, you need to have just a story that you can share. Now, unless it's a brand new product, that's a different conversation. But to be able to say to you, Nick, what I'd love to do today is share with you three examples of businesses that have been very successful working with us. Then what I'd love to do is talk to you about what it costs. And then I'd love to find out if you're interested. So that you've just laid yourself out a path to ask for the order at the end. They're expecting it. So again, the three steps, it's very simple. Love to share with you examples of people that we've worked with that have loved it. love to talk with you about the pricing, and then love to see if you're interested in it. And if you're not, it's okay. It's not that big of a deal. So what you're doing is you're using others' success. It's called social proof. Using others' success to drive your conversation forward. And you've already told them, hey, at the end, I'm going to ask if you're interested or not. So it's not awkward at all. There really is a roadmap to follow. And I believe people say there's no book on how to raise kids. I think there's a roadmap to raising kids. I think there's a roadmap to having a successful marriage. There's a roadmap to being successful in sales. It's just a matter of, do you want to follow it or not? And that really is the secret. Are you willing to follow the path that has been laid before you? And are you willing to change in a post-pandemic world? COVID is, people have like almost forgot about it. It changed everything in sales. And I'd love to talk about that a little bit at some point.
Yeah,
it changed it.
What do you think that change was? And I think, you know, on this show, we focus a lot of changes that have been happening for, you know, 10 or 15 years, but we haven't really delved in. And I'm curious now what you think, what, other than that, I have no more concept of time. like it was a year ago. It's 5 years ago. I don't remember anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think really was a drastic change in our business, in our industry?
The focus on the lack of logic amongst people in general, the lack of perceived logic has changed everything in the sales game. Let me explain.
Yeah.
It used to be that if you made a logical argument with somebody, you could convince that individual to change their mind. If you made a logical argument, well, let's not talk politics, but let's just use politics as an example. Let's just say as an example, that you're on the left side of the conversation and I'm on the right side of the conversation. Even if I make a logical argument to you, we're just talking politics, but not getting into detail.
Right, right.
You're not going to change your mind. You're not going to concede because that's the world that we live in. You're not going to concede because by conceding, by default, you're saying you agree with me and you would never agree with me. So
right. What's become a part of identity.
Correct. It is a part of the identity. So I'm different though. If I'm on one side and you're on the other and you make a good argument, I'll say, okay, fair point. You're not going to change my mind, but fair point. Okay. How does this apply to sales? Because of this happening in America, and because of the arguments that came from COVID and came from the political divisiveness that's out there, we can no longer sell solely based on logic. Because even when we make a logical argument to an advertiser or a business, if it doesn't fit their viewpoint, it's false to them and they're not going to change their narrative. They're not going to change their mind. So let's flip the script. Because we realize that people are more emotional now than they've ever been before, we have to play into that. So the way that we play into emotion is by sharing success stories. And when you share success stories of others that have used your product, your service, your media, your brand, or whatever, it takes the illness of ROI off of you as a salesperson. And it puts it on other people that have come before them. The fear of missing out, good old FOMO. Top of mind awareness, good old TOMA. All of those things are all emotional selling strategies. So one of the biggest changes is, if you are a logical seller, you're just not resonating with as many people as people like me that are emotional sellers. It's not that my conversations are illogical. The biggest change has been we have to play into the emotional mindset of all of these people we're running into. Because if you try to logic somebody to death, it's literally like trying to take keys from a drunk friend. The more logic you give them, the less likely that conversation is going to end well. At a certain point, you just have to grab the keys and say, you're not driving.
That's an interesting take, and one I hadn't really thought of as directly related to the time. And I'm going to have to think about that one.
Yeah. It's, well, and the other thing is, because it's a hard conversation for some people to absorb. I'm not saying you're not absorbing it. It's a hard conversation because you typically sell the way that you buy. So right. I'm an emotional buyer, so I'm an emotional seller. My wife is a logical buyer. She would be a logical seller. The problem is she'd be a mismatch for the majority of people that we're meeting. So when you think about the changes that you personally could make or listeners, viewers of this show could make, if you go to buy a car, for an example, and it's all about the miles per gallon, more than likely you're logical in your nature. I buy a car because it makes me look cool, feel good, or whatever, regardless of the MPG, right? Well, if you're a logical buyer, you're probably a logical seller, and you might just need to change your approach in the world that we live in today. Now, hopefully we'll see a lot more compassion out there coming in the future. Hopefully we'll, you know, go back to some things that were a little more compassion oriented. Hopefully we'll get out of being so emotional all the time, get back to a little more logic, because logical selling is easier. two is four, you know?
Right. Well, but is some of that also because, as you just said, though, we're not focusing on process. We're not focusing on how the hot dog is made. Mm-hmm. We're not focusing as much on product as we are the audience and the shared power, the power of a shared audience. All of that really leads more to an emotional connection between you and your client than does a logical approach where it's about the process. I mean, I think all of that is really kind of fitting together.
It does. It does. As long as you're aware of it. What happens is a lot of times people that are logical sellers think that everybody else is an idiot. And why are they not buying from me? It's so logical. People say to me all the time, well, that's a no-brainer. Well, there really is no such thing as a no-brainer in today's society. You really have to explain yourself. You have to explain your viewpoint and recognize that you're probably not going to change somebody else's mind. So it's just a matter of being in alignment. For example, if I looked on LinkedIn before selling you, I would look you up on LinkedIn, look at your picture to kind of determine in my mind how old you are, where you might fit in relationship to me. I'd look at your about. I'd see, are you a lister? Because if you're a lister, then you're somebody typically it's a little more logical. You look at my LinkedIn. It's like, I love my job. I love 80s cult classic music, movies. I love 80s rock and roll, you know. And you can kind of determine who it is that you're meeting with. You can look at what they share on Twitter, on LinkedIn, Facebook, et cetera, and kind of figure out kind of who they are. So if I'm an emotional seller and I figure out somebody online is logical, I better change my approach to be more logical. What you've got to do first, though, is recognize who it is that you are. What type of seller are you? And be willing to change your process a little bit to match the person you're meeting with. That's why I love LinkedIn. I think it's one of the best sales resources out there when it's used correctly. And it's a bit of a cheat sheet to the soul of the person that you're, you know, that you're going to be meeting with. You can learn a lot about somebody on LinkedIn, Twitter, social media. That's for darn sure.
The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. I feel like probably at some point I need a whole episode on using LinkedIn. I'm not great at it. I'm trying to be better. I'm not great at all social media, but you know, I always say to me, social media is like the mechanic and his car, right? I'm really good at telling other people how they should do it.
Well, it's like the cobbler, you know, the cobbler's kids have no shoes, right?
Right. Exactly. Exactly
the thing there. It's like, or the auto body shop owner has the most dents in his car.
Right. Right. I'll fix your car.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, keep in mind too, you know, I love that you mentioned process, Nick, because the, you know, process is a logical side of who I am not. And so, but I recognize to be successful in sales, I need a process. You've got to think of yourself as a bit of a quarterback of a football team. If the great, and he's not my quarterback, but the great Tom Brady, when you look at what Tom Brady does and how he was able to transform the Buccaneers.
I'll allow you to say his name once.
In the season, is that He has a process that he was able to follow. The reason that they did not continue to win, in my opinion, at Tampa Bay is because they got off of the process and they started going emotional. And so you've got to ask yourself, I mean, what is the process that Ryan or Nick can set up to be successful, even if you're not a process-oriented person like me? So you might say 2 and 2 is 4, period. I say 2 and 2 is 4. Yeah. You know, let's have fun with that. You've got to be willing to morph and move and change and identify things that work. For example,
habits and behaviors.
Correct. So I might say, I know that reaching out every day to a client is not going to work out. You can teach it, you can proclaim it, but it's not going to work because it's called being annoying, right? I recognize though, every 3 business days is just annoying enough to move the needle, but not so annoying that someone's going to hate me. I recognize that as much as I don't like a process, every 3 business days is my process to prospect new business. So I recognize even as an emotional person, to be successful, I need process in my life. So if you're willing to change, willing to morph, willing to kind of be somebody you're not some days to get the deal done, not unethical. Don't get me wrong. Willing to change your style and approach to be successful. That's what it's going to take. But my friend, it applies to your marriage. It applies to relationships, raising kids. If you just stay who you are and you never change, you're going to miss out on a lot of beautiful things in life. That's for darn sure.
Right, right. Exactly. I kind of want to loop some things together here.
Sure.
I know we've kind of bounced a little bit, but I want to tie some of that together because we talked about changes in technology and the types of news products that are being delivered, changing in how we approach sales and all of those things. So I want to take that approach and the product. And put those together because we are producing the news in different ways. And really it's more of, you know, what was the term 10 years ago, 15 years of convergence was the word, right? But it's more of, we have to embrace all of the ways. We had a guest recently who talked about thinking digital first. And for her, the success in that was you are collecting content and producing things in all fashions. You are getting video, you're getting audio, you're writing things. You can use your digital tools to put all of that for a big, complete news package. So as our technology and our products are changing, you know, we're doing the legacy content as well as the newer digital things. How does that fit in with all of the changes in how we approach the business side, the revenue side of our business that we've been talking about?
Yeah, right on. So it's a great conversation to have. One of the biggest selling points in all of this is we are one of the last vestiges of permission-based media. So let's talk newspapers first, just like a second, that. If you don't mind. It's a legacy traditional media product, but it's a permission-based model, and we don't sell that enough. Permission-based models, think about this. People that pay to receive a product, there's cheaper ways to line your birdcage than buying the local paper. Right. When you look at what Poynter Institute just came out, I guess it was last year, now that we're recording now, 74% trustworthiness ranking, people feel 74% of local citizens trust their local paper, 76% according to Poynter trust local television. When you think about the trust factor that's out there, we have two good things in play. One, people pay to receive the paper, and no one's surprised that there's an ad in it. For the last 50, 60, 70 years, we've trained people that a part of this paid experience is that you're going to see advertising. No one's going to open the paper and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe there's an ad in here. Nor are they going to go to the newspaper website or media company website and say, I can't believe there's advertising here. They come to the website for a reason. They pay to receive the paper for a reason. So we need to sell based around the permission-based model. Facebook's intrusion-based, Instagram's intrusion-based. I mean, almost every other media is intrusion-based media, other than what we do in the print media side of the business. Now, there is implied permission. When someone listens to a radio station, it's kind of implied you're going to get ads.
Right.
But if we could just wrap our arms, our hearts, our arms, and sell the simple, we are permission-based media. People trust us and they want this information so much that they're willing to pay for it. There's a reason that it costs more to advertise in the newspaper than on Facebook. Because we have to pay reporters, we have to pay to print, we have to pay for delivery, because it's a permission-based model. And I really think we need to scream that from the mountaintops. And our websites as well are permission-based. People don't just happen by a local media website. They're coming there for a reason: sports, court reporting, who's passed away, you know, those type of things. And we have to embrace that permission-based model. Even people out there that do on-demand delivery, the free newspapers that are out there,
right.
People are making an action to pick it up. That is giving permission that, hey, I know there's going to be ads in here. Those permission-based models are worth more money, period.
Well, and that gets into, even on the digital side, right? The digital subscriptions, the memberships, and it's not just about that little bit of extra revenue, which we all are trying to find every little bit of revenue, right? But I get what you're saying too. That also, that adds to that permission and that story that we're telling about who our audience is and who we're producing the news for.
Yep, for sure. And people will pay more for products that they really feel are going to be beneficial to their lives. People will pay more from a subscription perspective. And they also, though, will support your community efforts. One of the coolest things, and I know I've listened to you talk about it on the show before, is, so you don't want to buy an ad from me. What about supporting community journalism in our area? Well, what do you mean? If you don't feel like an ad is worthwhile to your business, would you be willing to support us from a community perspective as we endeavor to cover this community? Would you give me $250 for that? Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that's what you're doing with your advertising. Your advertising, if it's not meaningful to your business, which I actually think it is, then if nothing else, make this investment and contribution to keeping community journalism alive. I mean, look at the number of, you know, is it the Google service that is allowing people to do subscription management?
News Initiative.
You know? There you go. The News Initiative. It really is based around, would you be willing to support community journalism? And in droves, people are doing it. If my local TV station said to me, we're going off the air unless you pay $5 a month, more than likely I'd ante up $5 because I want it that bad.
Well, and that goes back to the emotional sales approach that you talked about earlier. And it's funny, you put a label on it. I had never thought about that. If I look at where I am most successful when I go to a business partner in town to try to create that ad sale and that partnership, I pitch community more than I do my own product. Because to me, it's all working together to support community.
Right. Yep.
And this is a part of the community that's needed. And you think so too.
Yep. Agreed. And whether I like NPR, don't like NPR, I still respond to the solicitations for support because I feel like it's something that's needed in the community. Whether I read every day, every page of the paper or not, I still subscribe because I believe that it's important for me to support community journalism. So I think there's a couple of sides to this. One is that people will support it. And the other thing is advertisers do need it. The problem is a lot of folks out there are trying to sell ads. And that's, no one woke up this morning and was like, gosh, hope Ryan Dorn calls. I've got, you know, 10 grand for a bunch of print ads, you know.
Why doesn't that happen?
Why doesn't that happen more often?
We have that happen.
So we know though that there is a compassion level, an emotional level that people will support things that are important to them or to their families. So I think it gets beyond the ad buy and focusing more on the emotional side of things. I'm just so encouraged to hear about the projects out there, whether it's Bethesda, Maryland, or it's in Los Angeles, the number of communities, smaller communities that are stepping up to support their local papers and keep that community journalism rolling. It's very heartwarming to see in a world of chaos that is occurring. It's great.
Well, that's my next question is, as you are out and about, because you do have, and I'm going to let you tell a little bit about your consulting business before we wrap up, but
yeah, sure.
As you are out and about, this is what you do. You talk to media organizations around the country. What are you finding and how are people reacting to this kind of change in approach a little bit, or is it as drastic a change in approach as I think it is?
It is dramatic. It is drastic, and people need to embrace it and understand kind of where it's going. Because if you keep selling traditional media in traditional ways, you're going to get traditional results, and that's not going to keep your going forward. I just was talking with a group, and their biggest hangup was they didn't have enough sales sheets. It's like, okay, guys, I mean, is it really that you need a bunch of more sales sheets, or do you need to get out and have more conversations with people? And the idea that you're buying an ad or selling an ad is just so short-sighted in the grand scheme of things and what we can actually do to help local businesses be successful. You mentioned Rick Rogers. You mentioned partnerships. It's just recognizing that it really is a partnership. The money they're giving you is far more than beyond an ad. It pays accountants. It pays reporters. It pays people to print, to broadcast, you know, and all those different things. So what I'm noticing, though, is that, and it's getting better, people are very resistant to change. And why are they resistant to change?
Yeah, especially our industry.
Oh my gosh. They're so resistant to change because that's just how it's been done. And I'm not changed to just be changed, just to be changed. I am changing because I see the result that's coming when people change and move in positive directions. But going back to the conversation about conversations, most people, most businesses need three things. They need new business, they need recurring business, and they need referrals. And we do those three things very, very well. Unfortunately, most businesses focus on us as new business people. If I don't need new business, I'm not going to call the radio, TV, newspaper, or whatever. So as salespeople, we need to recognize that most businesses need those three things. We're good at those three things. And most successful businesses do three things: traditional media, social media, digital media. So they need three things: new business, recurring business, and referrals. We can bring them new business, referring business, and recurring business. And most businesses do three types of things with us: traditional media, social media, and digital media. So what I try to do as I travel is keep it really simple on the threes. Three words in your subject line, three sentences in your emails, sell them on three price points, no more, no less. Try to keep it as simple as possible, because change is easier if it's simple. When you go into an organization and I say, we're blowing everything up, we're starting from scratch, this class is called Teaching Old Sales Dogs New Tricks. They're all like, you know, what are you doing?
You've lost them. They're done.
Keep it simple. Keep it straightforward. Keep it relevant. And just create a bit of a process that's easy and that they can wrap their arms around. And that has been my secret to success in working with local papers, national companies, big ones like Adams Publishing Group and people like that. Keep it really simple for them. Keep it really simple for the advertiser. And it doesn't have to be complicated. It really doesn't.
Well, and I think it's always a good reminder that tools and techniques that we find that are successful, whether it's on the sales side, promotions, editorial, even, if they are successful at one organization in our industry, no matter the size, they can be tweaked and used at your organization as well. And there is nothing wrong with, you know, I like to tell people I have created a career out of R&D, rob and duplicate. There's nothing wrong with finding somebody else's successful tool and molding it to work for your business. Exactly. As well.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not terribly difficult to replicate success if you just pay attention. And that's what's interesting to me is the number of organizations that don't share subject lines, that don't share email templates, that don't share slide decks. One of the worst things an organization can do is allow salespeople to sell it their way. The example that I give is people will always say, Ryan, I like that. I'm going to take your idea and make it my own. Well, the problem is, what if you're wrong? What if what you're doing is wrong? I'm trying to share with you something that's working across the country. And the moment you make it your own, your chili might taste great, but that's because you love all kinds of chili pepper in it. Right. The vast majority of people don't want that much chili pepper. So follow the common scenarios that are working at other organizations and use them to be successful. To not mention the quarterback's name again, when you think about repeatable patterns of success, when you think about repeatable patterns of success, it's as much about identifying things that work and repeating them, but it's also about identifying things that don't work and creating plans to get rid of those things. That could be people or it could be processes as well.
I think that is a very good caveat to my lighthearted statement about our R&D, and that it's about the pieces of that process that work. As you said, the common things,
right,
that can be repeated and used. I mean, look, you can tweak the presentation and the packaging all you want, but there are, as we said earlier, habits and behaviors that make each of those processes work.
Right. Having an open mind, in my opinion, is key to almost everything in love, life, and in business. It's just having an open mind. Yeah. I love that. I mean, and the more curious you are, typically, you know, curiosity can be dangerous, but, you know, the more curious you are, the more chances you have of being exposed to things that make sense. And that's why I think that we have such success at our niche media conference, is because people come with kind of one mission, and that is to learn about what others are doing to be successful. And there's nothing wrong with R&D and robbing and duplicating and stealing a really great idea and making it your own. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, as long as it's legal, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have to say that part, but I will, in case there's any attorneys listening.
Exactly.
You know, but I think be curious can fit. I mean, that is the driving force between all sides of our business, right? You can start with the editorial and covering the news. Producing the news takes a level of curiosity and a commitment to curiosity. But going out and creating the partnerships and making the sales and the revenue side, you have to be curious as well, or you're not going to solidify those partnerships.
Exactly. And there are some sides to sales that editorial people should consider and wrap their heads around. One of them would be, what if you have a project, something you wanted to write about? Let's say an investigation that you wanted to do or a project you wanted to write about for quite some time. It is highly likely that there would be a sponsor, a business, an advertiser that is like-minded. It's like, you know what? I would be happy to fund that. You know, can I sponsor what you're doing? Can I sponsor your efforts? And they don't even want to be involved in the story. They just want to sponsor your efforts to get that done. There are so many sides to the editorial business that sales can support in an honest and ethical way to help journalists do some of the things they want to do that are expensive. There's sides to it. For example, if you can expand your editorial coverage by adding video to the mix, and we just so happen that Blue Cross Blue Shield is the sponsor of our video channel. It doesn't mean that Blue Cross is going to be in every video. It just means that they're supporting what you're trying to do by adding video to the editorial mix. It's things like that where you can get curious, you can get creative, you can make some money on it and expand what you're trying to do from a coverage perspective. Businesses love community journalism. Well, I mean, unless you're writing negatively about them, they love supporting community journalism. It's been proven in market after market, large and small. They love that kind of stuff. So embrace it.
Absolutely. And I think we could do a whole other episode on that blending of the two sides to find new revenue sources and new ways of creating. We won't do it today because I want to be cognizant of everybody's time, both yours and our listeners, because if you let me talk, we'll go 2 hours.
I understand. I'd love to talk about it.
As we wrap up, I want to give you an opportunity to tell people about your business and how they can follow along with you, how they could get in touch with you if they're looking for maybe a little help in upping their revenue game, or it's time for some retraining. Look, we all got to go back and get retrained every once in a while.
Yeah, right on. So, well, thank you for that. So there's two sides to my business. Brainswell Media is the business where I actually go on site with folks. We can do it on Zoom, but it's not as effective. We go on site with teams and we train them about new things that are happening in emerging technology in the sales business. And so we help them reframe their process and we help them just be the very best that they can be. I like to say this, my goal is simple, to help salespeople in the media business and other businesses. I want them to take their sales life to places they never dreamed possible with one kind of goal in mind. And that is, I want you to be able to pay your bills, but I want you to make a lot of money in sales so you can support charities, so you can give to your church, so you can send your kids to the school that you want to send them to, or whatever the circumstance is.
Be a part of that community.
Exactly. The other side of the business is the niche media conference business, which is where I met a lot of some of your colleagues as well. And the niche media conference is 350 some odd media professionals getting together a couple times a year. We just got together in New Orleans and to share ideas and to be open and to be honest and to go to different tracks and listen to keynotes, but more than anything, network to learn about what we can do to grow our businesses. One of the things I love about our events is they're almost all round tables. So you're learning from each other, guided by a moderator. So whether you need training or you want to come on location and you want to learn from others, I think we've got that covered. So either Brainswell Media or nichemediaevents.com. And I just love the media business. It's what I've done for 33 years. I just absolutely, absolutely love it.
There's nothing like it. I always felt like it was the Godfather movie. I tried to get out once and it didn't work.
Sold cell phones for 2 weeks. Back in 2003, I sold cell phones. I went to my boss, who is now the VP of sales at Verizon, and said, this cell phone thing is going nowhere. I'm going back to media. If I would have just stuck with Joe Reynolds, I'd probably be a gazillionaire right now and own so much stock in Verizon. And I'll just keep selling ads.
I can relate to that story.
Yeah.
If people want to follow on the socials, can they follow along with Brainswell?
RyanDorn.com, DOHRN, RyanDorn.com is where you'll find, links to basically everything that that we do over here. And love to be a part of your success at your media company. That's for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you, Ryan, very much.
Pleasure.
I appreciate it. I feel like we're going to talk more.
I'm
going to pick your brain again,
Sounds good.
It's the show or just, to make me feel better.
There you go. Hey, whatever it needs, I'm happy to do it. And thank you so much for the opportunity to talk a little about what we do.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That will wrap us up for this episode. We'll talk to everybody next time. The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.